Today's KPR Presents was originally broadcast on July 30th, 2017.
Yes, I was weird. You see, the thing about autism is it goes from someone who can't dress themselves to half the geeks out in Silicon Valley.
From Kansas State University, KPR presents An Hour with Dr. Temple Grandin. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR Presents, scientist and animal behavior expert Temple Grandin lectures throughout the country on her own experiences on the autism scale and how best to educate young people with learning disabilities. In just a minute, we'll hear Dr. Grandin's recent Landon lecture at K-State. But first, Temple Grandin summarized some of her thoughts on life with autism for NPR's essay series, This I Believe. This essay comes to us through PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
Temple Grandin sees problems that other people don't. Then she devises solutions. For Grandin, our invitation to summarize personal belief in 3 minutes presented a specific problem, how to explain to the rest of us the way her mind deals with the very concept of belief. Here she is with her solution for This I Believe.
Because I have autism, I live by concrete rules instead of abstract beliefs. And because I have autism, I think in pictures and sounds. I don't have the ability to process abstract thought the way that you do. Here's how my brain works. It's like the search engine Google for images. If you say the word love to me, I'll surf the internet inside my brain. Then a series of images pops into my head. What I'll see, for example, is a picture of a mother horse with a foal. Or I think of Herbie the love bug. Scenes from the movie Love Story or the Beatles song, Love, Love, All You Need Is Love. When I was a child, my parents taught me the difference between good and bad behavior by showing me specific examples. My mother told me that you don't hit other kids because you would not like it if they hit you. That makes sense. But if my mother told me to be nice to someone, it was too vague for me to comprehend. But if she said that being nice meant delivering daffodils to the next door neighbor, that I could understand. I built a library of experiences that I could refer to when I was in a new situation. That way, when I confronted something unfamiliar, I could draw on the information in my homemade library and come up with an appropriate way to behave in a new and strange situation. When I was in my 20s, I thought a lot about the meaning of life. At the time, I was getting started in my career designing more humane facilities for animals at ranches and slaughterhouses. Many people would think that to even work at a slaughterhouse would be inhumane, but they forget that every human and animal eventually dies. In my mind, I had a picture of a way to make that dying as peaceful as possible. I believe that doing practical things can make the world a better place. One of the features of being autistic is that I'm good at synthesizing lots of information and creating systems out of it. When I was creating my first corral back in the 1970s, I went to 50 different feedlots and ranches in Arizona and Texas and helped them work cattle. In my mind, I cataloged the parts of each facility that worked effectively and assemble them into an ideal new system. I get great satisfaction when a rancher tells me that my corral design helps cattle move through it quietly and easily. When cattle stay calm, it means they are not scared, and that makes me feel I've accomplished something important. Some people might think, if I could snap my fingers, I'd choose to be normal, but I wouldn't want to give up my ability to see in beautiful, precise pictures. I believe in them.
Temple Grandin, with her essay for This I Believe. We are inviting everyone to distill their personal beliefs into less than 500 words for our project. You can find out more and see all the essays in the series at npr.org or call toll-free for information 888-577-9977. For This I Believe, I'm Jay Allison.
And for Kansas Public Radio, I'm Kay McIntyre, and this is KPR Presents. Today on KPR Presents, Dr. Temple Grandin, who spoke November 29, 2016, as the 175th Landon Lecture on Public Affairs at Kansas State University.
Great to be here. Got lots of things to talk about today. And I want to just ask you, there's a lot of innovators that probably were on the autism spectrum. Einstein had no language till age 3. Steve Jobs was a weird loner, and he brought snakes to school, turned them loose in the elementary school classroom just to liven things up. You know, by the time I was 4, I learned how to talk. There's a lot of different kinds of minds. All right, since I'm in animal behavior, I had to pick out a woman in animal behavior. That was Jane Goodall. In fact, starting out in the cattle industry in the 70s, being a woman in a man's world, it wasn't fun. That was shown in the movie really accurately. But what would happen to somebody like Jane Goodall in today's educational system? She had a 2-year secretarial degree. She got her PhD without her bachelor's. And she had difficulty remembering faces. Somebody who's definitely kind of different. She liked the solitude of the woods. How about Thomas Edison? Hyperactive high school dropout, labeled addled by his teachers. That was Thomas Edison. Now, I do a lot of work in the meat industry. In fact, I developed a piece of equipment called the center track restrainer system, or double rail restrainer system. It's in all the big plants. So I worked in these large plants. And who do you think works on a lot of the really clever equipment? It's the guys that are kind of different. Tyson's hiring right now. Billboards on the highway. And they can't find skilled mechanics. Cargill's hiring big banners on their fence up in Milwaukee. Because the kind of quirky guys that are kind of different, they're all retiring now. And I'm concerned about where they're going. Getting addicted to video games. Because the schools have taken out the skilled trades and the hands-on stuff. The thing that saved me. When I was in elementary school, I was saved by hands-on classes like wood shop and sewing, making things. And then when I grew up, I still kept making things. What about Steven Spielberg? Not a good student. Bullied, teased in school, dyslexic. Boy, I can tell you, I was bullied in school. And the only places I was not bullied was the shared interests. Things like electronics, horseback riding. Rejected from a top film school. Where would he end up today? How about Elon Musk, the rocket guy? He was severe bullying, very severe bullying, appeared deaf. And in this book, his mother wrote that he was different in a nerdy sort of way. Sounds familiar? You see, the thing about autism is it goes from someone who can't dress themselves to half the geeks out in Silicon Valley. That's where the lucky people on the high end of the spectrum get to go. They get to go work for Google and other Silicon Valley companies. And then another kid gets into a video game problem, gets bullied, and is not having such a good outcome, and they're the same kid. All right, let's look at some of the common denominators for success in unique minds. Grew up in an educated family. That's true for the 4 people I just showed. Also true for me. Early exposure to books and reading. Mother used to read to us. Early exposure to career-relevant interests. I got introduced to beef cattle when I was 15 when I went to my aunt's ranch. Well, if you take out all the things out of the schools that can turn into careers, the kids aren't getting exposed to enough stuff. Also, learning how to work at an early age. When I was 13, my mother got me a sewing job. When I was 15, I was cleaning 8 horse stalls every day and running a horse barn. Learning how to work. Also not too over-specialized. And I had a great science teacher. This is where mentors really turn a student around. Well, Jane Goodall got serious introduction to animal behavior young because when she was 5, she went to the next door neighbor's chicken house to try to figure out how the chickens laid eggs. Good high school student, loved animal books, and she had a mentor. She was originally hired by Dr. Leakey's as a secretary. And then they let her start observing the chimpanzees, and things changed. Thomas Edison, childhood chemistry experiments. He burnt up the baggage car on a train. Almost got drowned in a grain elevator, but exposed to career-relevant things. He dropped out of school, but he was homeschooled by a mom in a house full of books. Thomas Edison learned how to work at a really early age. At 14, he was a telegraph operator. Even earlier, he was selling newspapers. Learning work skills. I'm seeing too many kids that get a label, fully verbal kids, labeled autistic, ADHD, and autism and ADHD is mixed up all the time, and they're not learning how to work. Sometimes they're not even learning how to shop. Things that I learned when I was 7. Well, Thomas Edison asked lots and lots and lots of questions. Yeah, that's an autistic trait. And he memorized every street in his town. Steven Spielberg got introduced to his profession young. He was saved by his little Super 8 movie camera. Early introduction. And then he got an internship at Universal Studios. I always emphasize to the students the importance of internships to get into jobs. And then Elon Musk was reading Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and fortunately, the local bookstore let him just come in and read books, even though he didn't buy them. Again, exposure to educated things. He also learned skilled trades in his dad's workshop at a really early age. He also did extensive international travel. I've traveled all around the world, and it's really broadened my outlook on many things. He was introduced to programming at age 11. Fortunately, he's just old enough where you got an old-fashioned kind of computer where you learn how to program it without fancy video games on it. He almost went into the video game addiction, but he didn't have that happen to him. He did try to rent a shop to start Video Arcade. He was too young to do that. He was doing grubby manual labor in his 20s, and then he talked his way into an internship at the Bank of Nova Scotia and started PayPal. One thing I figured out very early on, and he figured out early on, is certain people could open the door. And he was so persistent calling up this vice president that he had lunch with him and got the internship. Yes, and he used car wash valves in his rockets. I think maybe he's kind of got a little hubris because one of his rockets just blew up. And I think he was pushing the system too hard. I've been trying to read about some of the stuff that went on with the fuel tanks. I don't think it was the car wash valves, though, that did it. He was pushing some other stuff. Now, the thing about these creative geniuses is none of them had a conventional educational path. I'm really concerned about so many smart, geeky, kind of different kinds of kids getting screened out. Also, they did not over-specialize. I was at a plant science meeting this summer talking to some of the plant scientists because I gave my Different Kinds of Minds talk, and they told me, yeah, they got these graduate students and they got all these advanced degrees, but they got no creativity. They've gotten too hyper-specialized. Kids that learn differently, kids that get a diagnosis of various reasons, tend to have uneven skills, good at one thing, bad at something else. I am a photorealistic visual thinker. This helped me in design work. Everything I think about, it's a picture, but I couldn't do algebra. This algebra requirement is screening out a lot of good kids. I talked to a president of a community college just recently, and she's got smart students who can't get a business degree because they didn't pass algebra. How did I get through school? Because in 1967, algebra was not the national norm. It was finite math, matrices, probability, and statistics. With tutoring, I got through the statistics. With tutoring, I got through the finite math. Why not let them take something else? The other thing I am observing, and I just saw this fall, is kids are doing all this pre-algebra stuff, but they're not teaching them to find the area of a circle. And I've designed hydraulic and pneumatic equipment with cylinders. You better know how to find the area of a circle if you're designing pneumatic equipment. It's that simple. They can't find the area of the stage. Just the simple, practical math. Also, I talked to a third grade teacher 2 months ago who told me she got in trouble for teaching her kids borrowing and subtraction. Well, if I wasn't able to write it down on the paper, I wouldn't be able to do it because I've got working memory issues. We're screening out the kids. I don't know who Cargill and Tyson are going to hire in the future to keep their plants going. And this morning I met a salesman for Frito-Lay, and I told him that they're going to have problems with their plants falling apart because the people that can fix them are playing video games in the basement. Another kind of mind is the pattern thinker. This is the mathematician mind. This is your Silicon Valley programming person. They think in patterns. They don't think in pictures. This is your mathematician, your engineers, programming people. And they tend to often have some trouble with reading. But kids don't learn programming by osmosis. It's got to be introduced. They also have to learn how to do tasks other people want. Even at Google, you're allowed to have 15% of the time do what you want. The rest of the time, you've got to do assigned projects. And then you've got the verbal guys. They know everything about their favorite subject. They might be really good at specialized retail. You got kids in your classes that are different. Maybe they're dyslexic, ADHD, mildly autistic. They need to learn how to work. That needs to start in middle school with things like church jobs. Instant, they're legal age. I want them on the retail floor. They have got to learn working skills. I don't want to transition phase. I want them to know how to work before they graduate my school. Now, I'm a visual associative thinker, sort of like Google for images. Get a keyword, I see pictures. You know, maybe a tea kettle. Now, I'm seeing a tea kettle we had as a kid that whistled. I'm seeing a British tea kettle with a cozy on it. And then I'm seeing a truck stop with a giant coffee pot for a sign. So now I've gotten from tea to coffee. It's associative. And in my book, The Autistic Brain, I'm going to give you evidence-based that these different kinds of minds actually do exist. There is scientific evidence of visual thinking and the more patterned mathematical thinking, two different types of thinking. Elon Musk was a visual thinker. You know, and he was able to take lots of different information and put it together. I kind of do the same thing. I read a lot. People say to me, well, how come you know about, you know, the Fukushima nuclear power plant, which was a gigantic visual thinking mistake. That's why I read about it. It's not a very good idea when you live next to the sea to put your super important emergency cooling pump in a non-waterproof basement. That's what they did. But what I've learned about the mathematician is the mathematician doesn't see the water going in there. You see, this is where we need the different kinds of minds doing stuff. You know what Thomas Edison said? I'm not a mathematician, but I can always hire some mathematicians, but they can't hire me. Because what I've observed working on things like big Cargill plants is who does different things. That quirky guy that's a visual thinker thinks up that really creative piece of equipment. I'm concerned about over-specialization. We're getting doctors now. They're getting so over-specialized, they're going to end up getting replaced by an artificial intelligence program. All right. Within the last year, you know, when older folks like us get together, we like to gripe about health problems. And I talked to a lady that actually just had an allergy that could be treated with Benadryl, and a top lupus specialist was doing hive biopsies. Really? Hive biopsies? I think that's kind of ridiculous. And the bone specialist failed to test a patient with a lot of diffuse symptoms who had untreated Lyme disease. Maybe you need to rule out the simple first. I kind of like this thing from Isaac Asimov. I read this when I was in college. A degree is the first step down a ruinous highway. You don't want to waste it, so you go on to doctoral research, and you end up being a thoroughgoing ignoramus about everything in the world except for one subdivisional sliver of nothing. Well, artificial intelligence can do super specialized tasks. They all can replace the super specialized doctor. They will not replace his receptionist. Right now, there's an expert system that can read x-rays better than doctors can read them. Well, the thing about the AI and people with autism is it's both bottom-up thinking. It's sort of like epidemiology. There's kind of two ways you can approach science. You can approach science so you get the hypothesis first, or you form the hypothesis through specific examples. Like in epidemiology, you get a case of food poisoning and another case of food poisoning, and then you got to figure out what are the common factors between these different cases of food poisoning. That's bottom-up thinking. It's the kind of thinking that needs to be used a whole lot more for a lot of policy stuff. Because a big concern I have today is what I call abstractification. You've got people making policy that have never drilled down into the field, find out what's actually going on. When you do top-down thinking, you tend to overgeneralize into vague, grandiose things that just aren't going to end up working very well. So what would happen to a child like me today? I had no speech until age 4, all the symptoms of severe autism. I probably would have gotten really good early intervention. That is something that's being done right. That's the bright spot. But what I'm seeing now, video game addictions. And don't call me an old fogey. I'm seeing smart kids getting addicted to video games, and they're playing video games on Social Security when they need to be working in the maintenance shop at the Cargill plant. That's where they need to be. And you know what they're going to find? That working in that maintenance shop's a lot more fun than video games. Some of the most funnest stuff I ever did was out on a construction job. There's two things we used to like to talk about in the job trailer. How to build all kinds of cool stuff, and how stupid the suits were. That's typical job trailer talk. But I would be in a lot of trouble if I hadn't had the hands-on activities. I spent hours as a child making bird kites to fly behind my trike when I was 7. And I put little wingtips on them just like modern jets have got. And it took a lot of experimentation to get my bird kites to fly. I'm seeing kids today that they're not willing to make a mistake on something. I had to try again and try again different ways to make the kites. I spent hours making and building things. Also, teenagers are not getting work experience. Okay, let's start out with middle school. You can walk dogs for the neighbors. And I had one mom say to me, "We don't have an educational program for that." And I'm going, "Really?" I'm talking about just setting up the next door neighbors because I want them out of the house, doing a job for somebody else on a schedule. Yes, cash economy. Yes, I have a special little rule system. I kind of divide society's rules into 4 categories. Really bad things, like robbing banks and stuff like that we don't do. Then you have courtesy rules. Kids need to be taught that. Table manners. You got kids that are different, we need device-free meals. Want to get rid of all the phones. We're going to have a meal without any devices. Got to learn how to talk. In the 50s, we were not allowed to bring toys or coloring books to the table. TV was limited to 1 hour a day. Got to learn some courtesy rules. Then I have illegal but not bad. Oh, man, you really learn this in the construction industry. I remember asking Jim Uhl, a contractor, how he got permission to block Hopple Street in Cincinnati with a concrete truck. You don't. You just do it at 10 o'clock in the morning when the traffic's light, and when the police come around, you ask them to direct the traffic. It's just that simple. And then you have the sins of the system, and don't touch those dogs because they really bite. Boy, they're the things you don't. They're so red-hot sensitive, I won't even discuss what they are. But they're things that get you in tons and tons of trouble, so don't do them. Okay, brain scans show to have a large visual thinking circuit, bigger than a control. Probably in the top 25% visual thinking circuits. Now, here's where I'm in trouble. My left parietal area is missing some stuff. Kind of ruined the algebra department. I've got no working memory. So when I do math, I got to do the write on the paper, the borrowing and subtraction. I can't do it in my head. And in engineering, we got to do a workaround. So if you get one of these guys out and I got to teach him how to run the Starbucks coffee machine, he's going to need a pilot's checklist. Tear down, step 1, step 2, step 3, cleaning steps, give him a pilot's checklist. Now, one advantage in the meat industry is there's no academic barrier of entry. You need to be able to read USA Today and do old-fashioned 6th grade math. That you'll need to know how to do. And I know a lot of quirky, smart maintenance people. They built big, complicated things, and they were saved by that welding class in high school. They're making equipment right now the cattle industry's buying. How about somebody who stutters, ADHD, dyslexic, horrible student, saved by welding, and he makes a thing and he sells it, I can't tell you what it is, that's been very, very successful metal fabrication business. I was saved by the fact that algebra wasn't required in 67, and I entered college on probation. Mother talked the dean of Franklin Pierce College, that was 2 years old, to take me in on probation. At this point, I had decided I was going to study. Now, growing up in the 50s, I learned some important things, to be on time. I'm seeing a lot of smart kids with various labels today that can't get up in the morning and get to class. That was not an issue for me. Once I had decided to study, I got to class. I did not lose my homework. I got it done. I was in an educated family with lots of books. Art ability was nurtured. I was very good in art, and that became the basis of my design business. Mother taught me reading. You know, Dick and Jane books didn't work for me. Mother taught me reading with phonics. But I want to warn you, phonics works for one kid, but it doesn't work for all of them. There are others where the whole word method works better. My favorite books when I was a child was about famous inventors and Black Beauty. Early exposure to career interests. I cannot emphasize that enough. I was exposed to dairy cattle when I was 14, beef cattle at 15. I was riding horses at 14, 15, 16. I learned carpentry. I took an experimental psychology class and got interested in optical illusions that helped me in some of my work with cattle, because I noticed that cattle were afraid of shadows, they were afraid of a coat on a fence or a reflection. And I did have two subjects I did do well in high school, biology and writing. Those were two things I was good at. Work experience, sewing job at 13, horse stall cleaning at 16, roofing at 16. That probably have to be 18 today for that. Had a great time, wonderful shingle throwing contests. And it was a shared interest. Making signs and selling them. And my first sign was for a beauty shop. And I had to make a sign a beauty shop actually would want. So I put the brick lady on it. Now I'm really dating myself. And carpentry work. Now, I was not over-specialized. I loved biology. When I was in college, we were very lucky in my little small college that had only been going for 2 years. They hired a retired animal behavior scientist to teach animal behavior. So I was introduced to that in college, Dr. Tom Evans. I took an English literature class that was required that I thought I was going to hate, turned out loving it, because the teacher was so good explaining what the author meant, you know, was trying to convey in things like the Odyssey and the Iliad. And I had practical building skills in carpentry. My science teacher got me motivated. And then if you watch the HBO movie, I really did make that optical illusion room. And he didn't tell me how to make it. I had to figure it out. And out on my aunt's ranch, I built gates. I learned driving. All the projects in the movie were true. Yes, I was weird. So how did I get people to have me design their cattle facilities? I showed them my drawings. When you're weird, you gotta show off your portfolio. It's just that simple. And when I was a young kid, they thought I was mentally retarded. And then I grew up and I designed this piece of equipment, the center track restrainer or double rail restrainer. It's in all the big meat plants. I designed the cattle handling facilities at Cargill plants all over the U.S. and in Canada. How did I get that job? I showed Bill Fielding this drawing. I mailed him this drawing. I also mailed him my very professional-looking brochure. 30-second wow. Mr. Fielding opened it up. The drawing folded out like this. This is pre-internet. You got to remember, this is late 80s. And I got my brochure. I had plastic pages in there with a few pictures. I had a couple of articles from a meatpacking plant magazine, list of references. 30-second wow. You don't put too much junk in it. And they called me. And I got my first job with a portfolio. Half the cattle in North America are handled in equipment I designed in the meatpacking plant. I think that's doing pretty good for a kid they thought was retarded. I talked to a student last night who's on the spectrum, wants to be a veterinarian. I said, you can do it. Just prove to him you can do it. Now, when I first started out, I thought I could fix everything by just build the right system. But equipment's only half the equation. The other half of the equation is management. You get the equipment in, they've got to actually manage it right. So I was hired by the USDA in 1996 to do a survey. and only 30% of the plants could shoot 95% of the cattle dead on the first shot because equipment was broken. That's management. Then I was hired by McDonald's in 1999 to start working on assessing animal welfare at packing plants. So I came up with a real simple way to score them. Traffic rules for plants, really simple, no complicated bureaucratic nonsense. They had to make five numbers. Shot dead 95% on the first shot, 100% dead before you cut them up, no more than 1% falling anywhere in the facility, 3% mooing in the stunning area, and the hot shot electric prodders, you had to get that down to 25%, where previously it was 500%. They had to make their numbers. I didn't tell them how to build a plant. They had to make their outcome-based numbers. And the thing I'm really happy about is out of 75 McDonald's suppliers, only three had to build something expensive. Everybody else we fixed with non-slip flooring, with lighting, training, and management. That's the other half of the equation. Engineering can fix half the problems. And I saw more change than I'd seen in my whole entire career previous to that. All right, let's look at how the different kinds of mines build a big Cargill plant or a big any other kind of big industrial plant. The visual thinkers, the ones like me, we're in the drafting department. You better give us respect. Big plant, lay out all the conveyors for the meat fabrication. All the complicated stuff is done by the drafting department. You know, please don't put us in the service corridor with the cable trays. Really don't appreciate that. Not given enough credit. The millwrights, the quirky guys in the shop, they invent all the new mechanical equipment. Now, what does a degreed engineer do? We need him. Boilers, refrigeration, we wouldn't touch that stuff. That's for the mathematical mind. Calculate roof trusses. Don't put a young engineer out of college in charge of working with contractors. He will get ripped off. That is a job for the crusty old guy in the shop who's been there 20 years and knows every way to rip off steel and concrete work. Yep, seen it done. But you need the whole team. Yes, Tyson, Cargill, they're hiring right now, visual thinkers. Let's drag them off the video games. Much more fun in the plant. I've got students right now out on some interesting projects. And one of the projects, we had to figure out, since cattle were bigger, how much room they need to lay down in the corrals for, because our space allowances have to be changed. So Helen goes out at 3 o'clock in the morning and gets up on this catwalk over these cattle. It's got to be really quiet so they don't get up. Take pictures of them when they're sleeping. And you know what? She's finding out that meatpacking plants are a really interesting place. But you got to get out and try it. Now, some people might ask me, is observation part of science? Yes, it is. How about astronomy? That's science. How about the atom smasher, you know, super collider and things like that? That's science. Observation is part of science. It's where you make the hypotheses from. Epidemiology is science. You start off with one case of food poisoning, piece it together. Now, when I learned that my visual thinking was different, that gave me a lot of insight. So I get asked, how do the different kinds of minds learn to work together? The first thing you have to recognize is that the different kinds of minds exist. I've had to get a whole lot better on learning how to talk to verbal thinkers. Let's look at the iPhone. Steve Jobs was an artist. An artist made the easy-to-use interface. The engineers had to make the inside of the phone work, because if the engineer designed the interface, it'd be so complicated nobody can use it. You need to have the different kinds of minds. We've got to make sure educators are not screening out some of these unique students. This whole algebra thing really concerns me. You see, I think the mathematical thinkers think you need that to think. No, if you're a visual thinker, you don't need that to think. I'm finding a lot of visual thinkers can do geometry just fine. Please don't screen them out. The thing is, we need to have all the different kinds of minds. And I have found that all the years I've worked with construction projects, it kind of affects how I think. Because in construction, I had to sell a job, design it, supervise its construction, and start it up and make it work. We got to get that job done. And if some smart kid is in the basement playing video games, we've not gotten the job done. So I just want to finish up and say, when you're in construction, you got to get the job done. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Dr. Temple Grandin, professor of animal science at Colorado State University and widely renowned lecturer on autism and learning behavior. Professor Grandin travels around the world speaking about her own experiences growing up with autism and was the subject of a 2010 film starring Claire Danes. She's written numerous books, including Thinking in Pictures, Animals Make Us Human, and The Way I See It. Grandin spoke at Kansas State University on November 29, 2016, as part of the Landon Lecture Series on Public Affairs. Coming up, Grandin takes questions from the audience at McCain Auditorium. From the University of Kansas, we are Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence and 89.9 Atchison. You can find us on the web at kpr.ku.edu. Support for KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio comes from the KU Visitor's Guide, the official guide to all things Jayhawk. Copies of the guide are available for the public at the KU Unions and bookstores, the Lawrence and KU Visitor Center, and at many other locations in and around campus. KPR listeners know the importance of investing. Make a wise investment for your company. Invest in KPR listeners as your customers by becoming a KPR business sponsor. Interested in partnering with us for marketing? Find out more at sponsorship.kansaspublicradio.org. If you're just joining us today on KPR Presents, Dr. Temple Grandin, professor of animal science at Colorado State University and widely renowned lecturer on autism and learning behavior. Professor Grandin travels around the world speaking about her own experiences growing up with autism. She spoke at Kansas State University on November 29, 2016, as part of the Landon Lecture Series on Public Affairs. And now, Grandin takes questions from the audience at McCain Auditorium.
Yeah, my name is Daniel. I'm from Winfield. How did you deal with the kids that bullied you while you were in school?
Well, getting bullied was really horrible. And the only places I was not bullied is when there was a shared interest. So get involved with things like robotics, art, music, band, because when I was doing electronics, the kids who were interested in that were not doing the bullying. And now, interestingly, I had one little respite from bullying when we had a fad in our school of doing giant stilts made out of 2x4s. And I played with giant stilts with one of the worst bullies. And while we were doing giant stilts, he didn't bully me. So get involved with shared interests. It could be theater. That's another, you know, great career thing. You know, that's the best thing. And then there's a good time to just turn off your phone so that if you get texted when you're doing your favorite thing, texted by bullies, you don't get it. But get shared interests. That saved me. My friends were with horseback riding, electronics, and model rocket club. And I made a hit with the students when I made a rocket that looked like our principal.
Dr. Mason.
Dr. Grandin, I want to thank you very much for your presentation. I'm having a little trouble getting the image of a rocket looking like your principal out of my mind right now, but would you give some advice to the educators in this room? We have many, many students, but we have faculty, staff, instructors. Give us some advice on how we can be sure not to screen out students with unique skills, that we can...
Well, the first thing you better do is drop the algebra requirement. Now, I'm not suggesting dropping all math. Let them substitute statistics or geometry or something else. I find a lot of visual thinkers can do geometry just fine. And I don't know what's going on all this pre-algebra stuff because the amount of kids I'm finding now that can't find the area of a circle is ridiculous. Also, build on strengths. But kids have also got to get exposed to things. So we take out all the theater and band and music and cooking and sewing and woodworking and welding and auto mechanics. They've got a huge shortage right now, diesel mechanics. The kids aren't getting exposed to those things as career options. Students get interested in things they get exposed to. other thing I'm learning, I gave this talk with about the different kinds of minds, the Fermi Lab, and I asked scientists there, how did you get interested in high-energy physics? High school physics teacher. My interest in cattle goes back to high school. So many students, it starts there, and if we take out all the things that expose the kids to interesting careers, they're not going to get into interesting careers.
John Fisher, you talked about early intervention. What happens if one learns to adapt wrongly, not diagnosed till retirement? How does one unadapt wrong adaptment to be mainlined into normal society to go ahead and function properly?
Well, that's so abstract I can't answer it. Now, when I'm talking about early intervention, I'm talking about little kids that aren't talking. You see, there's kind of two kinds of autism. You've got little kids that are not talking. That was me. Real severe looking at age 3. You got to do a lot of intensive one-on-one teaching to get the kid talking. Then you got the kid that gets diagnosed maybe at 8 or 9, no friends. Mixed up all the time with ADHD. And then you've got some people later on. Okay, I want to ask you, what have you done for a profession all your life?
The most unsatisfying job I could find. 1 out of 400 tested, and I'm going to retire at the job.
What was the job?
Mail clerk.
Okay, but at least you got a job and you kept it. And that's doing better than a lot of the kids are doing today.
For 36 years. For 36 years.
Well, you kept that job. And delivering the mail is an important thing to be doing. You know, when it gets into, like, how do you fit in with society, I think the best thing to do, find a hobby, a shared interest. That's where your friends are going to be. Work is what makes my life worthwhile. And people ask me all the time, are you going to give up teaching? No. Last night, I spent 3 hours teaching students right here at K-State basic cattle behavior. I'm teaching them how to use a scale ruler and how to do a drawing. Because I think teaching is something really worthwhile. Find a hobby or something you'd like to do. What do you like to do?
Beekeeping, reading.
Okay, why don't you get really involved with beekeeping? You need to join a beekeeping club. Get really good at beekeeping. Write about it in magazines. That's where your friends are going to be.
Thank you for your encouragement.
Okay. All right.
On the right.
There.
Hi. I have an 11-year-old, and I'm curious, how do you get them to work?
Okay, wait a minute now. First of all, I got to learn something about this 11-year-old.
Okay.
Fully verbal?
Fully verbal, very.
Can he read USA Today? That's my basic reading test.
Well, yeah, he could.
I'm trying to get some idea of where the level is.
Absolutely.
11 years old. If he belonged to church, he needs a church job.
No.
Like being an usher. And I found that... when I had my sewing job, that was my first job at 13, I was proud of the fact, and I got paid for doing that. When I was running the horse barn, I was proud of the fact that I was taking care of the horses and that I was allowed to take care of the horses and that I was good at doing that. So let's think of something that your 11-year-old could do for a job.
He's very high anxiety. That's the problem.
Well, okay. How much exercise is he getting?
Not a lot.
All right. We need to up his exercise. And what are you having for breakfast? What's he eating for breakfast?
He's very particular, so...
What does he eat for breakfast?
Granola bar.
That's too high glycemic.
Okay.
I supported the pig in the egg industry this morning.
Okay.
And...
Okay.
No, but I'm real serious about this. If I had a granola bar for breakfast, by 10:30 I'd be almost non-functional. Exercise, animal protein in the morning, and then I've been on antidepressants since my early 30s to stop the anxiety. I'd recommend you get my Thinking in Pictures book. It's for sale outside, and there's a chapter in there on how I dealt with anxiety, and there's a point where you might need a little Prozac.
He's on it.
I'll tell you, all three of the best designers in the meat industry when I worked in construction 20 years ago were on Prozac. See, the visual thinkers, they were panic monsters. Okay, so he's on the Prozac, but he's not exercising.
Right.
Because I have found that the antidepressant alone is not enough. One little tip on antidepressants, low doses. You use antidepressants for anxiety. You must use very low doses or you're going to get agitation and insomnia. So he's got to up his exercise, and you've got to just get him out and doing things. Don't baby him. Too many of these kids are getting too overprotected. When I was 15, I was afraid to go to my aunt's ranch. If I hadn't gone to my aunt's ranch, I wouldn't be here now. So what did mother do? She gave me a choice. I could go for a week, or I could go all summer. Not going was not one of the choices. Get him out and doing some things.
Okay.
Okay, do you think you could do a church job?
We don't attend church.
What? Okay, then you find something else.
Okay.
Walk dogs for the neighbors? He needs to get out and do something outside the home. It's got to be outside the home.
Okay.
Outside the home, doing something on a schedule for somebody else, preferably something every day, like walking dogs, somebody else's dog, not your own. He's got to be there at 6 o'clock every morning and take Mrs. Jones's dog out. This okay. is something he needs to start learning now. What kind of interests does he have?
Oh, a lot.
Like what?
Computers, Star Wars, James Bond.
Why don't you get a Star Wars club started? I was one innovative teacher that did that in her school, and then her kid became the head of the school. They got a Star Wars club started at the elementary school. Yeah, do it. Make it happen. We're in construction. Okay.
I'm Joshua Kobo from Concordia, Kansas. I was somebody who was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, or at least before they took it off the DSM-5. I've significantly more skilled at statistics than most of my classmates. I'm a visual.
Well, good. Why don't you get a job doing statistics for people? I'll hire you to do my statistics. That's a saleable skill. You can do that one freelance.
I was thinking of recently. I've been thinking more and more about my career choice, and I've been thinking more and more epidemiologist lately.
Okay, now are you in college? I've got to find out where you're at right now.
I'm a senior in high school.
You're senior in high school. Okay, let's say you came here to K-State. Do internships in the summertime. The other thing I recommend to every student, you know, in my college or here, go look at the websites of all the different departments and find interesting, maybe there's an interesting professor in entomology, and go volunteer to work in his lab, because that's a back door that gets you into all kinds of things. Another thing I want to tell you is, being a professor of animal science comes first, and autism is secondary. Autism's a very, very important part of who I am. But I did an awful lot of stuff out in the cattle industry before any of my autism stuff even got known by people in the cattle industry. Yeah, you want to be an entomologist first. Entomology and statistics comes first. Well, you can find some, you go on the KSU website and look all around in all the different departments and go read their papers online. And then you know what? You go up to his office, you don't say anything about Asperger's. You show him a portfolio of some of your statistics. Let me tell you, you're hired. Do it.
All right, please.
I'm Randy Schmidt from Sabetha, Kansas. And I have a fourth grade son with high functioning autism.
He's in the fourth grade?
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, he's a visual thinker.
He's fully verbal.
Fully
okay,
verbal.
Advance his art skills. Teach him how to do lots of different kinds of art on assignment. Gotta learn how to do
tests. He's not artistic. He has very little interest in art.
Okay, he's not interested in art. Okay, what's he interested in?
Kind of like that.
Video games?
He likes Mario Kart, but we don't let him play.
Good. We need to limit the video game playing to 1 hour a day. Same rules I had in the 50s for TV.
We kind of use that as a behavior if he does well at school. If he doesn't have bad behaviors, it's a reward. But
and what does he like to do besides play Mario?
Well, he wants to be a race car driver.
All right, let's take the race car interest. Mm-hmm. Let's learn some mathematics with race cars. Let's learn some physics and some science. How do race cars work? Mm-hmm. In other words, take that thing he's interested in and you broaden it, but you tap into that fixation. What kind of race car does he like?
He loves Jeff Gordon. He loves NASCAR stock cars.
He likes NASCAR mm-hmm. stock cars. Mm-hmm. Okay, then we're going to use this particular type of race car. And you can do a lot of mathematics and physics and science just on how race cars operate and how they're different from regular cars.
Okay,
even though they're stock on the outside, but they're not stock on the inside.
My question is how, you say get rid of the algebra, but we can't. How do I get a visual thinker through algebra?
There are some of them that are being screened out. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And the thing that saved me was the finite math. And a lot of Silicon Valley people go to Montessori schools. There's some things I've got to change on this, mm-hmm. because I'm seeing too many kids that can't get through the community college because they can't do algebra flunking out, and they're having really, really awful outcomes. I'm not suggesting getting rid of all math, but I think something's really wrong here. The pattern thinkers have taken over on this. Because to do all the things that we built at a Cargill plant, you don't need algebra, but you do need the old-fashioned sixth grade math. Mm-hmm. We got to start thinking about what can this kid do when he grows up? Mm-hmm. Meat industry is no barrier of entry industry. Okay, you need to read USA Today level of reading. You'll need that. And you'll need your old-fashioned sixth grade math and some courses in welding and shop. Does he show any of those kind of interests?
No, I mean, he loves to read.
He loves to read.
He's a very eloquent reader. The comprehension is kind of getting him.
On comprehension, we've got to break it down. Mm-hmm. There's levels of comprehension. Let's say you read about the Samsung phone, burned a hole in the carpet at Southwest Airlines. Okay, that's something that's very straightforward. Okay, if I cut the picture of the burnt phone off, would he be able to read that and tell me a phone burned a hole in the carpet of an airplane?
Unless it had to do with Superman, no.
Well, you see, reading has different levels. Mm-hmm. But then there's another level. Mm-hmm. Why did these phones burn up? Because they want to beat Apple and they rush them into production. That's a higher level of comprehension. Mm-hmm. How is he just on things like table manners, he's dressing, showering, all those things?
He needs some reminders, but he does a pretty good job. I think that he would be able to live on his own. I think he would.
Well, he's only in fourth grade.
Yes, yes.
What you want to do is make sure you keep improving. I think we'll go to the next question.
Yep, on the left, please.
My name is Alex Morup from Hutchinson, Kansas, and I'm a junior this year. And
a junior in high school or college?
High school.
High school, okay.
And one of the main things I've been now thinking about was, well, my question truly is, what was it that you truly loved about animals which made you want to, learn a little bit more about their behavior and how do you function?
Well, I got exposed to cattle in high school. And what I've been looking into lots of how students get interested in careers, and students get interested in things they get exposed to. That's one of the reasons why doing internships is so important. Like at this university and at my university, we have like 50 different internships on different stuff in the cattle industry. You're going to like a ranch, a feed yard, the packing plant, the pharmaceutical industry. There's all kinds of different things. And you have a chance to try careers on and find out something that you might like to do. And I emphasize this to every student. You're junior in high school. What's your favorite subject?
Well, my favorite subject basically is mainly art, but when I was a kid...
Let me tell you, art is a field where you put your portfolio up online and it's good enough, you can get freelance jobs. That's how I started out my business. It started out with sign painting then gradually went over into the design and Corel system. You start that kind of business one job at a time. If your art's good enough, you put it up online. Don't put rubbish up online. You want something where they look at your web page and it's a 30-second wow. And you start doing commissions and build up the business. So I hope your art is on your phone, because you never know where you can show it to somebody and get a job. And art and computer stuff, you can do, you don't have to worry about health and safety rules. You can start now doing some of that stuff.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. On the other side here.
Hi there, Dr. Grandin. My name is Alana, and I'm in my final year of an applied behavior analysis program. And I was wondering, what is it that early interventionists like myself can do whenever we're working with these children diagnosed with autism and related disorders?
So you're going to be working with the very little ones, 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds?
I work with all ages.
Well, I had a lot of ABA type stuff when I was very young. Mm-hmm. The one thing you need to do, slow down.
and enunciate words. There's auditory processing problems, and my speech teacher would hold up a cup, and she'd go, cup, and then she'd go, cup, slow down, slow down. The other thing is they're like a slow computer. Give them time to respond, and if you push on them too hard, they jam. The other thing you've got to look at is the sensory issues. Some kids you can kind of go in there and jerk the front door open. Others you got to sneak quietly in the back door because you're going to drive them into sensory overload. So those are just a few little tips.
Thank you.
One more question.
My name is Seth McPhail. I'm from Salina, Kansas. How did you deal with...
Are you a student or...
I'm a student.
High school or college?
Sophomore in high school.
Okay.
How did you deal with being kind of separate from your peers?
It was difficult, and the places where I was not separate was the shared interests. This is why I emphasize this so much. Horseback riding, I had friends. Rockets, I had friends. Electronics, I had friends. And I was briefly friends with a bully when we did giant stilts for a few weeks. What do you like to do?
Well, I really like to build with Legos and...
Why don't you get involved with other building things, some carpentry stuff? That would be really good. I'm also a big fan of FFA, and you better make sure you keep that funded. For some students, showing a pig, showing a steer is the best thing that you can be doing. Those kinds of things. I'll tell you something interesting that Cargill at Skylar, Nebraska is doing because they're trying to figure out how to get their mechanics. Now, obviously, you can't take middle school kids into a Cargill plant. That's not allowed. So what they're doing is they're bringing videos in, but they're bringing in an electronic box called a programmable logic controller that works all the automated equipment. And they're letting the kids program that PLC, a real PLC from a real Cargill plant to run their robots. Instead of the toy Lego box, they get to use a real PLC controller. Okay, that's getting them introduced to something in the work world that can be done safely, completely safely. Get involved with more specialized things where you can have friends.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I know we have a lot more questions, but that's the end of the Q&A. So, Dr. Grandin, thank you very much for coming to Kansas.
Well, thank you all for coming.
You've just heard Dr. Temple Grandin, professor of animal science at Colorado State University and widely renowned lecturer on autism and learning behavior, drawing from her own experience on the autism spectrum. Professor Grandin has written numerous books, including Thinking in Pictures, The Way I See It, and The Autistic Brain. She was also the subject of a 2010 movie starring Claire Danes. Grandin spoke at Kansas State University on November 29, 2016, as part of the Landon Lecture Series on Public Affairs. Thanks to K-State for audio of this event. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.
Morning Edition is everywhere.
Lourdes Garcia,
Ari Shapiro,
NPR News,
Monrovia,
Sao Paulo,
Beirut,
London. Reporting from bunkers, streets, alleys, jungles, and deserts. But most importantly, we're wherever you are. Start your day with a trip around the world and wake up with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Listen every day, weekdays from 5 to 9 a.m. on Kansas Public Radio stations.